Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. We have two topics today. We'll hear part of President Donald Trump's speech at the National Rifle Association. We'll also speak to an expert from the ACLU about privacy issues brought to light when police in Largo went to a funeral home and attempted to use the finger of a dead man to unlock his mobile phone. We'll take your calls about both topics. Here's the number, 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. First, we're going to hear two comments that were left by listeners after our last show. I interviewed a young person and her lawyer. They're suing the state of Florida, Governor Rick Scott, and others for not doing enough to protect the climate. Here are two listeners responding to that show.
Hi, Sean. This is Dave in Tampa on April 30th. After listening to your program today with the individuals that are litigating climate change in the state of Florida, I think this issue deserves the same kind of treatment that the March for Our Lives folks have figured out, which is to turn money, corporate money, in the case of guns, NRA money, in the case of climate change, it's corporate money from utilities and fossil fuel companies, turn that to a negative for campaigns that accept large amounts or really any amounts of money from those interests. The sooner we can turn big money into big problems for those candidates, the sooner we're going to get people elected who are going to vote based on public interest. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Sean, my name's Rick. I live in Clearwater. I caught the latter portion of your show today where you're talking about solar energy with that young lady. Now, they're talking about building a baseball stadium there in Ybor City. We are the solar capital of the country. Why can't they not use that as an example to highlight solar energy in Florida? Sun Toyota up in Newport Richey has a facility that is based on solar energy. I remember reading an article in the Tampa Tribune regarding this. That's a pretty big operation. I'm sure those people would be able to work with the Major League Baseball people and the Rays to produce a cost-saving stadium that highlights the city. Thank you.
Well, those are two listeners commenting about our last show. Later on in the broadcast, I'll give out the number for you to leave a voicemail. You can always listen to our previous shows and comment on the stories. That's on our website, WMNF.org, or you can join us at Twitter or Facebook at WMNF News. Well, here's the number to call in for today's show, 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And before we continue, here's some breaking local news. Several local news outlets are reporting on Twitter that the city of Lakeland has voted to move a Confederate monument from Munn Park to Veterans Memorial Park. That's a topic we talked about maybe about 2 or 3 months ago here on WMNF's Midpoint Monday. Well, our first segment touches on privacy and technology, and I'm sure you'll want to weigh in. In March, Linus Phillips was shot and killed by police at a gas station in Pinellas County. Officers say they shot Phillip after he was about to drive away when police were about to shoot him. But that's when the story went search him rather. They were about to search him, but that's when the story gets even more convoluted. According to the Tampa Bay Times, detectives went to the Clearwater funeral home where Phillip's body was in order to try to unlock his mobile phone using the dead man's finger on the fingerprint sensor of the phone. It didn't work, but the whole episode alarmed Phillip's fiancée, Victoria Armstrong. She happened to be at the funeral home at the time. And we're going to take a closer look at the legal and privacy concerns with someone from the ACLU. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. Last week, I spoke with Jennifer Granick. She's the Surveillance and Cybersecurity Counsel at the ACLU. I began by asking her initial reaction when I brought her attention to this case.
Well, I think my initial reaction was probably the same as a lot of people, which is this was very ghoulish and very disrespectful to the family. And I think that was particularly true because Mr. Phillip had been killed by police in this police department. And now here they were at the funeral home, sort of grabbing the hand of the family's loved one who now has passed away. So I think I had a human reaction first, and then I had my lawyer reaction. And the lawyer reaction was very much about what are the rights of privacy in a personal cell phone.
So what are they?
Well, the Supreme Court recently said in a very important case called Riley, California versus Riley, that cell phones are different from other kinds of property that you have. And the court said, you know, there's so much of our private information on cell phones, from our pictures to our communications to our browsing histories, that you need to have a warrant to search cell phones, even if it's a phone that's on you when you're arrested, which normally you wouldn't need a warrant to search a package on your person. And so here they were trying to get into his cell phone, and I imagine they were trying to get into it to try to have information to justify whatever they had been looking for him for when they killed him. And, you know, then I thought, well, okay, this man is deceased, so the right to privacy in the cell phone, courts generally agree, doesn't survive after the person passes away. But nevertheless, I mean, it's still a piece of property, which presumably now belongs to his family, and there are still messages and pictures and all kinds of information on the phone that was not just Mr. Phillips, but also belongs to his family.
What are the legal rights then of the family members in this case to the information that's on the phone?
Well, I think that's the very interesting legal question that a court might answer now. If the phone is now the family's property because the gentleman is deceased and so Mr. Phillips' family has inherited the phone, you know, they have a constitutionally protected privacy interest in the property. And then I think there's a complicated question of whether they have a right to privacy in their messages and pictures and stuff that are stored on their loved one's phone, even after he passes away.
Now, there's a specific problem about how to access a phone, because phones can be locked in a manner of ways, whether there was a password or a thumbprint. Do you happen to know why is it that if they expected that the fingerprint would unlock the phone, why it didn't work when the man's body was used?
Yeah, my understanding is that the technology that detects your thumbprint, it's heat sensitive, so it requires the heat of the body to make it work and then read the fingerprint. And I've heard that that's true, and so it requires warmth, and I imagine that the police officers did not know that. But it's interesting because, you know, the question is, if you don't have a means of unlocking the phone, how do you get to that information? And in other cases, we've seen police officers and courts struggle with access to information that is stored on a phone that is protected either with a thumbprint or with a passcode.
Including trying to get the companies that make the phones or that make the software to provide a backdoor to law enforcement. Why don't you give us a little bit of background about that history?
Right. So increasingly, particularly with iPhones, Apple, which manufactures them, has been increasing the security on the phones such that the data is encrypted or mathematically scrambled in a way that is difficult, if not impossible, to unscramble and then to read. And Apple's done a number of things to try to help consumers protect the data on their phones. You know, these phones get stolen or lost. And so Apple's tried, you know, there are governments around the world that want access to these phones that are owned by human rights workers or journalists. So Apple's tried very hard to make these phones something that customers can count on. And a few years ago, there was a dispute over this because Apple's newest phones are very secure. And the FBI wanted Apple to write new software to help circumvent some of the security measures on its phone. They weren't able to guess the passcode, and they wanted something that would let them guess the passcode any number of times so that they could brute force or, you know, guess and get into the phone. And this phone was owned by one of the San Bernardino shooters. So the government sued Apple to try to force Apple to write this new software that would help it decrypt the phone. And Apple opposed it, as did basically all of the major internet companies. And then ultimately, so the question was, could the government force a provider to help it decrypt phones or computers or laptops or tablets by writing new software that would backdoor the security measures. And ultimately what happened is that that case got dismissed. There was not a final decision in it because the government found another way to get into a phone. There was a company that was selling a solution to help the government get into that phone. And so the government paid, I think it was $1 million or something. They don't, it was not clear, paid to get into the phone, and there was nothing there.
This backdoor solution, though, I imagine that you think that that's a bad idea from a privacy standpoint. Why would that be bad?
It's a bad idea from a privacy standpoint because if you have backdoors, it basically, this is a technique that not only can be used by the FBI with a legitimate reason, but can be used by criminals and can be used by oppressive governments without a legitimate reason. It's really not just a privacy problem, but it's a security problem. It means that you won't be able to trust that your data is safe.
And you often hear the argument, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then you shouldn't worry about this happening. But should you?
Absolutely, because everybody has something that they want to hide from somebody, whether it's your credit card number from a thief or your like snide comments from your boss or, you know, something that is a crime, but some low-level crime that people don't know, I think, all the things that are arguably criminal in this world. Everybody has something that they want to hide from somebody. And also, you know, I often say to people who say this, well, you know, it's not really about you. We depend in our society for freedom on all kinds of people who are journalists, who are activists, who are human rights workers, who are in the government. And the way that our society works requires that these people be secure so that they can't be imprisoned, so that they can't be blackmailed, they can't be extorted, they can't be, you know, sort of turned somehow from what they're supposed to be doing, reporting, advocating, governing. And so we need to ensure that we have security so that our society works.
And getting back to the case of the police trying to gain access to the phone of a man that they shot, in reading the legal analysis, it often came up that the person who had died has no expectation of privacy, but there has to be some sort of expectation of privacy. When someone dies, there's not an unlimited number of things that the police can do to your body, for example. There is some sort of legal expectation of some sort of dignity or privacy with your body after you die.
I agree with that. I agree with that. You know, the idea that you die and suddenly there's nothing about you that the government needs to respect is so alien of an argument.
And we're speaking maybe from a logical standpoint, but what about in the law? What does the law say about it?
Well, you know, there aren't a lot of these cases that have come up so far. And so, to my knowledge, we don't have a robust legal precedent about this. But, you know, my expertise is particularly in the area of technology and other people who are experts in, you know, things like how you have to treat a body would know about that better. I imagine that there are laws, especially at the state level, about how everybody from police to undertakers to funeral homes needs to treat a body in order to be respectful to the body, to the dead person's memory, and to the family.
Our guest is the ACLU Surveillance and Cybersecurity Council, Jennifer Granick. And Jennifer, let's go out on a limb here. And what are some of the worst case scenarios that you can think of people's privacy or information being violated even after they've died?
Well, you know, if the government's argument here holds and that you don't have any expectation of privacy, you know, where does that stop? Does that mean that police can just walk into your house because you don't have an expectation of privacy? Can they just look at your phone? Can they access your social media and your private email? I mean, that is a very dangerous argument because not only is it invasive and disrespectful of the person's life, it also is invasive of all their friends, their relatives, their roommates as well. And so I think that this case raises for the public some very important questions that we need to think about what kind of society we want to be and how do we want to be respectful of privacy and of personal dignity.
Right now, how much of our information can police get access to, or how many of our things, our possessions, can police access once we've died?
Well, that's a good question in terms of once we died. I mean, if you think about it, though, there's so much information out there about us, you know, from your search histories to your medical records to your web browsing. There's your email. There's your location privacy. So your cell phone, when it operates, tracks your location, and some of that information is collected by phone companies. And so there's all this information out there that just living in the modern digital age generates. And unfortunately, much of this information is not well protected by the law. There's a general rule that the contents of your emails is protected by a warrant requirement. In other words, the government needs to go to a judge and explain that they have a good reason for accessing that information. But a lot of the rest of the information is not protected by a warrant requirement, and sometimes it's not clear whether there's any legal protection for it at all. And I think that's something that needs to change for living people.
And would that include also like your Facebook posts, your social media posts? What about your bank account or your phone calls?
Right. So, you know, Facebook posts and social media posts, you know, if they're public, then the government's going to look at them. But then there's a question about what's required for, you know, if you share with a limited audience. And companies generally require that government agencies need to get a warrant for that. But for other information like your location or that sort of thing, some companies are not requiring a warrant, and it's, you know, that information is available. So you can really build a very robust profile of somebody, and not only of that person, but also of their friends and their family. So there's ways to protect this. I mean, we can, for example, Congress has considered but has not passed the Email Privacy Act. That would be something that would make very clear that the contents of your communications require a warrant. That doesn't mean that the police can't get it. It just means that they have to go to a judge and show they have a good reason to get it, you know, in a legitimate investigation. And there are other proposals to protect a lot of the non-content information, like our location privacy and that sort of thing. The ACLU has a case before the Supreme Court this term. It's called U.S. versus Carpenter. And in that case, we are asking the Supreme Court to find that historical cell phone location information, so information about where you were 2 months, 6 months, a year or more ago, is protected by the warrant requirement. And the court will decide that case this term.
So are there other new laws that we might need that would protect people's privacy even after death?
Yeah, I think that this shows that we do need laws to protect people's privacy after death. It should be made clear to everyone that something like this is wrong and should never happen.
There seems to be a kind of a different take or a different philosophy about privacy in Europe compared to in the United States. How does that difference manifest itself in how people's privacy is legally protected in Europe, for example?
Yeah, so big picture, Europe is much more concerned about commercial or consumer privacy than we are. They have sort of general purpose privacy rules that govern how commercial entities can use their data. And one of those rules, the GDPR, is about to go into effect, and it will change the way not only European companies do business, but the way American companies that have European users will do business. And so you're starting to see changes here in privacy policies and that kind of thing. In contrast, here in the United States, we don't have a big overarching privacy law. We have sectoral privacy laws. So we have a law about children's privacy, we have a law about health privacy, we have a law about bank privacy, but we don't have an overarching commercial privacy law. But what we do have is we have more robust laws about government access. We have the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and we have laws like the Electronic Communications Privacy Act that protects a lot of our electronic data that's generated in emails or social networks or that kind of thing. And in contrast, Europe's laws regarding government access tend to be much weaker than our laws are here. So it's an interesting cultural difference in terms of who you worry about. And I think our experience is, you know, from the founding of the United States is to be very skeptical of government power. And I think in Europe, their experience is to be very skeptical of commercial power.
Going back to the issue of the phone after you've died, and we talked about property rights, and presumably the phone as property would pass on to someone's heirs when they die. What rights do the heirs have to the property, in this case, the phone?
Yeah, I actually don't know the answer to that. I think every state has different laws about inheritance, and so I am not aware of what the laws are in Florida, but it does seem to me that, you know, the law can't be that once somebody passes away, it's just a free-for-all, and anything that they owned, the government can take or search or destroy or whatever. That can't be the rule.
And does the funeral home, who have, I guess, possession of the body, for lack of a better term, do they have any responsibilities or legal rights to deny the police access to the body?
I mean, I would think so. You know, I think they have a moral obligation. But again, you know, you're a private business. You are not obligated to let law enforcement into your business unless they have a warrant.
Those were the only questions that I had thought of. Is there anything else that our listeners should know about the issue of privacy, especially privacy of people after they've died?
You know, I think this case shows that it's a far cry from I have nothing to hide. I think that this case helps show that privacy and security is something that every family needs to care about. And I hope that your listeners will become engaged in this issue, call their representatives and their lawmakers, and support rules that protect and ensure that we have privacy and security in our cell phones, our laptops, and all the data that we generate.
Well, Jennifer Granick, ACLU Surveillance and Cybersecurity Counsel, thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Well, that was Jennifer Granick. As you heard, she's with the ACLU, the Surveillance and Cybersecurity Council. I spoke to her last week about this issue, about privacy issues that were brought to light when police in Largo went to the funeral home and attempted to use the finger of a dead man to try to unlock his mobile phone. What do you think? 813-239-9663. What are the issues that you think are important here? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. We'll start with David. Hi, David in Tampa.
Hey, how's it going, Sean?
Very good. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, you know, one thing I thought this, I think this is kind of akin to the way the government found the Golden State Killer, and I think it was through DNA matches through family, and it was from one of the private DNA search firms like Ancestry and 23andMe. And I always thought that those companies were a little bit suspicious, because could you really trust them to keep your privacy?
And now we know the answer.
Yeah, apparently not. And in terms of your fingerprint, you know, that's the type of thing that's also kind of a personal privacy, unique marker type thing as well. So, yeah, no, I think Europeans maybe have the right idea to be skeptical about these private companies, you know.
Well, thanks for those thoughts. I appreciate, and I wish I had more time. I definitely would have talked to her about that case of the serial killer in California, because that brings up a whole bunch of privacy issues as well. You know, obviously, catching a serial killer is a good thing, I'm sure that this could be used for things a lot more nefarious than that. If private companies have your DNA and can, you know, do whatever they want with it.
And, you know, I've talked to people who've done it, and I've mentioned those privacy concerns, and they kind of brushed it off. But, you know, I think this was the first case where it was really proven that you can't trust those companies to keep your privacy. So, yeah, I think it'll make people start kind of questioning those companies now, you know.
All right, David, thanks for kicking things off. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join in the conversation, we have Mike in Tampa. Hi, Mike. What would you like to say?
Yeah, they took the dead man's finger. I was still on the body, and used it to unlock the phone. Or
they tried to. It did not work.
It did not work. They didn't cut the thing off and try to do it that way.
No. You're trying to make this even more morbid than it already is.
Well, I didn't know what they'd done. But I had a lot of respect for the ACLU and always supported them up to the time of the Sherry Seibel case. I vehemently opposed the position they took on that. And if I talked about the rights of the family, I was thinking, what about the rights of the parents? And they have any rights, too. And I thought the ACLU totally overlooked that.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I'm going to move on because that's certainly something that we talked about years and years ago. I appreciate those thoughts, though, and thank you for calling in. 813-239-9663. Let's hear now from Lori in St. Pete. Hi, Lori.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not sure if I missed it at the beginning of the program, but is this the man who was shot at a gas station while fleeing the police?
Yes, so I explained that at the beginning, and I didn't explain it again at the end, and maybe I should have. So I'll give a little bit more background in case people weren't tuned in. Yeah, the Largo police shot this man. He was fleeing. They wanted to search him, but he tried to take off, and then he was shot and killed by the police. So the detectives went, later on, a few days later maybe, to the funeral home. They had his phone with them, and they brought the phone and tried to use his hand to unlock the fingerprint sensor.
Great. Okay, thanks for catching me. My thought on this is that, I'm just, of course, appalled that it's another black man who was shot while fleeing. So now we're shooting, once again, it's a case where we're shooting someone who's fleeing the police, shot dead for fleeing the police rather than them making chase or something. So I just know it was in the Tampa Bay Times, and I just noticed that the issue was about the cell phone and not, emphasizing once again that we've got another black man dead from fleeing the police. So that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you, Lori. And that's a good point that, we certainly are going to wait for the investigation that now, because they weren't able to get into the phone, maybe now the investigation will have more validity because it's possible, who knows what their motivation was, but maybe when they got into the phone, they could have altered or deleted things that might have hurt the police case when the investigation happens. Why was this man shot? Why did the police shoot and kill this person? So maybe now there's more of the crime scene, I guess, is preserved, and so we might find out more about it. So thanks for bringing that up. That's true. That is another aspect of this case that we will definitely try to follow as the months go by, I guess. All right, thanks for calling in, Lori. Let's hit John in Dunedin. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Well, yes. Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to weigh in on a couple things. For disclaimer for your listeners, I am an attorney, and I've got many years of practice in this sort of thing. On the personal side, I had a couple of elderly uncles die recently, and they did a very good job of leaving me passwords and logins. The two gentlemen had been living together for 30 or 40 years, but not without benefit of legal marriage. They were gay, but they kind of wanted somebody discreet, having a nephew lawyer in the family helps to sort of clean out their electronic things. And I did so, and I've done that for a number of people. Sometimes, like the woman that had been interviewed before kind of said, just a tirade against your boss or those comments about a family member, you do have a right of privacy. But my word for your listeners is this: take the time to write some instructions for a trusted person for what you want. Either give them access to your electronic stuff or don't. Ask that it be destroyed or be preserved. In the case of my own father, he wanted all of his letters and everything preserved for future generations. Downloaded it all to a disk, you can do that. But everybody should take the time to write some instructions or have a will or seal an envelope with a seal and leave it for some trusted person. There are things you can do, but I think absolutely in the case of the police trying to abuse a corpse to get its fingerprint to open a phone, get a warrant.
Which apparently they didn't do. But John, thanks so much. Good advice regarding the experience you had with your uncle. All right. Thank you, John. Let's move on to Linda in Tampa. Hi, Linda.
Yes. I wanted to weigh in on the DNA situation. It was on the news that this was not one of the ancestry or Dot 23 things. This was a free an open GED online thing.
When you say GED, are you talking about, and I apologize that I'm ignorant about the that part about this, but GED when you...
This was on the news the other day.
Okay, that's important information. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you should look into the other ones too, if you're gonna try something like that. But thank you for that point, Linda. I appreciate that. All right, well, let's try Chris in Sarasota. Hi, Chris.
Oh yeah, hi. I think the reason this case is taking on so much media attention is simply what your earlier speaker was saying, that there's a ghoulish aspect of it, respect for the dead and all of that. My other concern is that something as simple as getting a warrant in this case, because there's a potential homicide involved, it would have been relatively straightforward for the police to get that warrant. They were already in possession of the phone. It's obviously evidence of a crime scene. And there have been other high-profile cases of people who've been killed, terrorists, for example, whose phones have been opened by the courts. So the real concern here, as your gentleman caller just a few minutes ago, is why didn't they get a warrant? These are obviously experienced police officers. Most police officers know that a warrant would be necessary. But with the exception of that, I think whether the person's alive or dead, the police should be in the expectation they get a warrant to go into such a sensitive piece of electronics.
All right. Thank you, Chris. I think that's a good perspective, and I think that a lot of people would agree with you, and that does open up the question, well, why didn't they? It probably would have been something pretty simple, as you point out. 813-239-9663, if you'd like to weigh in on this or any of the other topics we're talking about. I am going to transition right now. That doesn't mean we can't talk about this more later, but I do want to play some of the audio from Donald Trump's speech at the National Rifle Association convention in Dallas. Trump's told the NRA a lot of provocative things that you may want to weigh in on. 813-239-9663. Don't have time to play the whole speech, but here's part of it. This is Trump, it's President Trump speaking on Friday.
And, you know, with respect to North Korea, remember how strong it was, and they were saying, this is going to be nuclear war. We're going to have it. No. You know what gets you nuclear war? Weakness gets you nuclear war. Being weak gets you nuclear war. That's what gets you nuclear war. So let's talk about guns, shall we? Paris, France, has the toughest gun laws in the world. The president just left Washington. Emmanuel, great guy. Nobody has guns in Paris, nobody. And we all remember more than 130 people, plus tremendous numbers of people that were horribly, horribly wounded. You notice nobody ever talks about them. They talk about the people that die, but they never mention that 250 people had horrible, horrible wounds. I mean, they never mention that. But they died in a restaurant and various other close proximity places. They were brutally killed by a small group of terrorists that had guns. They took their time and gunned them down one by one. Boom, come over here. Boom, come over here. Boom. If you were in those rooms, one of those people and the survivors said, it just lasted forever. But if one employee or just one patron had a gun, or if one person in this room had been there with a gun aimed at the opposite direction, the terrorists would have fled or been shot. And it would have been a whole different story. I mean, right? Right? We all know what's going on in Chicago. But Chicago has the toughest gun laws in our country. They're so tough. But you know what's happening? It seems that if we're going to outlaw guns, like so many people want to do, Democrats, you better get out and vote. Then we will get out, and you know what I'm going to say. We are going to have to outlaw immediately all vans and all trucks, which are now the new form of death for the maniac terrorists, right? They take a truck and they run over eight people and wound 60, like what happened in New York and what just happened. It's happening all over. So let's ban immediately all trucks, all vans, maybe all cars. How about cars? Let's not sell any more cars. I love you too. Thank you. I recently read a story that in London, which has unbelievably tough gun laws, a once very prestigious hospital right in the middle is like a war zone for horrible stabbing wounds. Yes, that's right. They don't have guns. They have knives. And instead, there's blood all over the floors of this hospital. They say it's as bad as a military war zone hospital. Knives, knives, knives. London hasn't been used to that. They're getting used to it. It's pretty tough. We're here today because we recognize a simple fact. The one thing that has always stood between the American people and the elimination of our Second Amendment rights has been conservatives in Congress willing to fight for those rights. And we're fighting. We're fighting to defend our freedom. We need the people in Washington to support our freedom, to support our candidates, to support Ted, to support the people that have to raise their hand. You know, they say we have a majority. We have what? A majority of one person? That's not really a majority. We need Republicans to do it right, to get the kind of things we want. We've got to get Republicans elected. We've got to do great in 18. Those midterms, we have to do them. We need judges who will enforce our laws, protect our sovereignty, and uphold our American way of life. The Constitution can't be changed by judges, bureaucrats, or the United Nations. That is why we are appointing federal judges who will interpret the law as written. In my first year, I nominated, and the Senate confirmed, more circuit judges than any new administration by far in history, and we will have the all-time record very soon. President Obama was very nice to us because he left us a lot of judges tonight. I said, that's a lot of judges. Like, almost 140. That's a lot of judges. I was very surprised. I was very happy. And we put an incredible new justice on the Supreme Court, Judge Neil Gorsuch. Yet virtually every single Democrat in the Senate opposed Neil Gorsuch, just like they have consistently opposed judges who will protect your basic freedoms. And by the way they're slow-walking people that are supposed to be working for us in government, if you look at what they're doing, in the history of this country, there has never been anything like what the Democrats are doing on great people who gave up their jobs and their lives to take a job as an ambassador or people working for our government, and they can't get approved because every single one of them is being slow-walked by the Democrats, and it's never happened before. And you know what? I hope we have long memories, but I hope we don't have to worry about it because we're going to be there a long time, so we won't have to worry about it. But what they're doing is disgraceful. What they are doing, Schumer and the group, what they are doing is disgraceful. What they're doing to the wall and immigration is disgraceful. And you just take a look at the border, okay? You take a look. Take a look at what's happening. My administration and conservatives in Congress were elected to uphold your rights, to rebuild our military, which we are doing a great job of rebuilding, to restore our prosperity, to secure our communities and defend our borders. Oh, we have the worst immigration laws anywhere in the world, but I'll tell you what. It's not easy for people to come in, I will tell you. It's not, but we have the worst laws. After years of defending the borders of other countries, we go into wars with other countries. We shouldn't be there. We go into wars to defend their borders. We don't defend our own borders. And we're going to start defending our country. We're going to start defending our borders. You've all seen on television, all over the papers, the illegal migrants pouring up through Mexico, flooding the border, many from Central America, Honduras, all over the place, coming up by the thousands. We're stopping them at different fronts, but we don't have laws. We have laws that were written by people that truly could not love our country. Illegal immigration must end. Illegal immigration must end. We are going to have strong borders. I will tell you, we have maxed out every law. We are going to have truly strong, and we're going to take people into our country, but they're going to come in based on merit, not based on picking somebody out of a bin. We are not going to let our country be overwhelmed, and we're going to demand Congress secure the border in the upcoming CR. It's going to be very soon. It's going to be very soon. In recent months, Democratic lawmakers have voted against legislation to close deadly immigration loopholes like catch and release. How about that one? We caught them. Oh, release them. Bye-bye. Welcome to America. Welcome to America. That's what we have. We're going to keep the violent criminals out. Senate Democrats like John Tester, you saw what happened there, what he did to one of the finest people in our country, what he did to the Admiral, what he did is a disgrace. John Tester. Bill Nelson. And Bob Casey voted against Kate's law, legislation named for Kate Steinle, who was gunned down by a five-time deported illegal immigrant. And you saw what happened with that court case. Can you believe the result of that court case? Can you believe that? The same senators, along with nearly every other Democrat, also voted to protect something that's actually becoming very unpopular, sanctuary cities. Can you believe finally people are starting to get it? Democrats and liberals in Congress want to disarm law-abiding Americans at the same time they're releasing dangerous criminal aliens and savage gang members onto our streets. These countries send up their worst. Remember what my opening speech, I got criticized for it. Remember? Well, guess what? They're not sending their finest, that I can tell you. We're getting some real beauties in here. But we're taking MS-13 horrible killer gang members. We're getting them out because our guys are much tougher than theirs. There is not even a little bit of a contest. And that's the only language they understand. That's the only language they understand. These are savage killers. My administration believes our cities should be safe havens for Americans, not sanctuaries for criminals. And we believe that violent gang members must be thrown out of our country immediately, not let to stay, to fester, and to get larger. We get them out, and we are taking them out by the thousands. And we had the right laws, which we can have very quickly with cooperation. We wouldn't even have a problem. Be so much better, so much easier. We believe that politicians who put criminal aliens before American citizens should be voted out of office immediately. As we secure our borders, we're also supporting the heroes who fight crime, serve our citizens, and secure our streets. Our brave men and brave women in blue. We love them. In my administration, we have a simple policy. We will protect those who protect us. You saw what I did with the military equipment, the excess equipment that was sitting all over the country in warehouses, never to be used again. And other administrations, they just didn't want to give it to the police. They said, it's too much protection. It looks too strong. It looks like military. Guess what? It's now being distributed all over to our police forces. And it's better than they could ever buy. Can't buy stuff like that. Today, our love and prayers go out to the family of slain Dallas police officer Rogelio Santander, who last week was murdered in the line of duty, very, very close to this arena. We ask God to help the others who were wounded, and they will recover. They will be better. They will be back. Send our love. So important. Thank you. And we mourned.
Well, that was President Trump speaking Friday at the NRA. I'm going to pause it. We might go back to it if we want to hear some more of that. But I do have some people on the line that I want to talk to. Elizabeth and Andrew will be right with you in just a second. I want to read a couple of emails that have been coming in. So that was President Trump speaking at the NRA. We have 813 out there. I'll leave your name next time, please. Trump said a lot in his speech. He's promoting fiction, believe me. Oh, said a lot of ifs. In his speech, he's promoting fiction, believe me, is what 813 says. Also, Adam out there says there are too many disturbing parts of this speech to point out. I don't understand how anyone can listen to this and think he's a rational human being. He just makes stuff up and the crowd loves it. The cult mentality is really disturbing. So that's a comment from Adam out there in cyberspace. What do you think? Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. It's 12:54 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. And you're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. Elizabeth, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
In regard to Mr. Tweet's speech, he talks like a stand-up comedian. He is always asking questions that are demanding of the public's responses. That's how he gets all his whooping and carrying on. Also, I was thinking about whatever they are, laws, regulations, one thing and another, that have been passed recently with regard to guns. I should think that the gun manufacturers were very happy now because it has been said and apparently is being done that the schools must, of course, be protected. That means they're going to be able to sell more guns, doesn't it?
So your buddy Marion Hammer up there in Tallahassee cried a lot of crocodile tears when Rick Scott passed that that new law, that, or, you know, signed that new law that the Florida legislature passed, saying that, okay, the age to buy a rifle, it goes from 18 to 21, also said that there have to be armed guards in every school district, which means cha-ching, her client makes and sells a lot more guns.
Yeah, that's true. She probably got some more money for that, too. Oh, well, life goes on anyway, Sean. Thank you.
Elizabeth, thanks for calling in. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have Andrew in Hardy County. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for taking my call. I'm not going to say too much about our not my POTUS, because we all know what's going on there, and quite simply, the best thing we can do is to find the means, not simply to remove him, but also to remove his number two, because that man is at least as dangerous as the current president. But impeachment aside, I want to get back to the great conversation you had with the representative of the ACLU and bring up something that might kind of help clarify for people's minds what the real concerns can be about what happens to the property of someone who's deceased. And, you know, the whole thumbprint access to the phone and all of that stuff and all the illegal means that are being used by law enforcement in the United States to try to access any information that they can get. You know, they're trying to turn the United States into Honduras and Guatemala. They've been practicing in Honduras and Guatemala. They've perfected their methods, and now they want to bring them home. But just a pure hypothetical, and this is a pure hypothetical, but it's, I think it's a valid illustration. You think about a locked, encrypted cell phone. You say, well, the nobody should have anything to hide argument completely to the side. Let's take one, and again, this is not historical, it's purely just an example. But let's take the cell phone of the recently deceased prince.
We're with you.
Okay. You want to talk about a right to privacy, a right to the preservation of someone's creative work. So, you know, any creative artist, any creative person, any person who uses his phone to blog, any person who uses his phone to do any kind of creative work at all, that creative work becomes the property of his heirs.
So his heirs should retain control of that. The police shouldn't really get in the way of any of that.
It should be impossible. It should be impossible. Right? That, you know, if you've got a creative worker, a research scientist, okay, who can put all kinds of information on an encrypted cell phone to protect vital research information, right? And the idea that the government should presume that, oh, he's dead, there's no interest in that anymore. Yeah, wrong. You know, it's the most. And the reason I bring this example up is simply to make it obvious how completely blatant their argument is as a falsehood. That, of course, there's continuous interest. And you take any person who's doing any kind of substantial work simply as an illustration, but that needs to extend to the protection of privacy of all of us, right? Because we all have the same right to privacy. We all have the same right to have whatever we're doing that we want to keep private. Right. And I mean, you know, people like to throw these dark shadows around, but you know, what if you're trying to organize a surprise birthday party for your spouse?
All right, Andrew, I think we get the point there. Thank you for bringing that point in. And if, you know, if you, I think you make some valid points there. And just to be certain that we expect these privacies maybe, but maybe there need to be stronger laws to make sure they're protected. Or maybe there needs to be more people thinking about this in order to make sure that they're not just handed away willy-nilly. So I appreciate that call, Andrew, and everyone else who called. Jerome's, sorry, there's two people named Jerome on the line holding. I apologize, I won't be able to get to you this show. I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted. But Jerome, if you're still on hold and would like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. If you have anything to say about any of these these topics. You can also join the conversation online. The story will be posted later at WMNF.org/news, and you can listen to it again or make your comment there. You can also comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineer, Alvaro Montealegre, and our phone answerer, Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. I'll be back next Monday at noon on WMNF's Midpoint. Stay tuned now for John Gilmore in executive session. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Bradenton, and Clearwater. Thanks so much for listening.